are being imposed on people who enjoy practicing harvest in this way as contests. Contests are part of sporting. No, I'm not persuaded by the final testimony here. I strongly oppose this. I think we are a bunch of people imposing our personal values on others who are really kind of minorities in this, our rural communities and our hunters. That's all I have to say.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Thorburn. We've had good dialogue. I'm going to call for the question. Anise, would you read the recommendation of the staff back to us before I call for the vote?
Certainly. The motion is I move to adopt the recommended rule changes as presented by staff.
Okay, there it is. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
Aye.
Okay, the motion carries. We are now moving to number 5, climate change. We are significantly behind schedule, so perhaps we could do this well and briskly. Lynn Helbrecht, please.
Hi, good morning, everybody. I am aiming to share my screen here. And Jeff, are you on? Do you want to give a little introduction?
Yeah, I'm here. Good morning, Mr. Chair and Commission. Thanks for giving us the time. I feel like every time there's a presentation that I'm involved in, we're behind schedule and are asked to expedite it. This one in particular and the next one are tough ones. We'll do our best, Mr. Chair. But I will say, like, climate change, from my perspective, and our agency's mandate and mission and our own contribution are really critically important as I hear people talk about not just now, but, you know, future populations, not just of fish and wildlife, but of Washington residents. Climate change is a big deal. And quite frankly, I'm thankful that we have Lynn Helbrecht. She's well-regarded across the country and internationally. Working on climate change. We are one of the first agencies to have, wildlife agencies and agencies in the state of Washington to have a climate policy. So you should be thankful for that.
Jeff, if I may, I'm not asking you to diminish your presentation. You know our schedule and we have an agenda and it's my position to try and keep on that. So I'm not asking you to give us the short version, give us the real version. Just do your best. That's all, keeping that in mind. Is that reasonable?
Yeah, totally.
Thank you.
And we will definitely deliver.
Lynn, can you switch your screen, your display screen there?
Am I not sharing? I'm sorry.
You are, but we can see your next slide. So go to display settings.
Well, while Lynn's doing that, you know, climate change is something that people used to debate significantly. And I think there's a growing awareness that, that climate is changing. For us, my experience has been that we've been relatively slow. Fish and Wildlife Agency has been relatively slow in expanding their focus and capacity around dealing with climate change. Maybe that's perhaps because many people think, well, what can I do or what can we do? But I want to just share a specific example because I also have had conversations with, I'll say some of our fishermen in particular, where I hear, well, climate change doesn't really impact what I care about. So a more concrete example might be that you all are likely aware that coho, I heard it this morning in public testimony, coho and Chinook sizes are shrinking. There's a new research paper out from Alaska going through the same shrinking or diminishing sizes. They found in that research a 30% reduction of eggs in female coho and Chinook salmon. And then when you think of the predictions for climate, we are expecting and in my opinion are already experiencing increased intensity of flooding as well as increased frequency of floods. And smaller salmon dig shallower reds. So those floods wash out more of our reds with fewer eggs in them. And then the consequence later is increasing droughts, which I think we're seeing a lot of effects of that right now as we speak, as I look out my window. And that brings less habitat for coho and steelhead, et cetera, but also increased disease. So these are things that instead of maybe our ability to count what we have today and set seasons and management decisions, these are things that in I think that we need to take more seriously about looking ahead to make sure that the decisions we're making today are going to result in a high probability of preserving, protecting, perpetuating fish and wildlife resources, as well as providing sustainable opportunities long into the future. So with that, I'm gonna shut up so that we can be as concise as humanly possible and turn it over to Lynn. Now we're gonna walk you through what we have done to date as an agency. I'll also note that we have in the draft strategic plan a sustainability strategy or action, and that will carry some of our steps further in our own contribution to climate change. And then tie back to where this agenda item initiated from, the commission's meeting with the governor and the governor's request for us to better engage hunters and anglers in combating climate change. So with that, Lynn, take it away.
Great, thank you so much, Jeff. Nikki, are you seeing the right slide now?
Yeah, it looks like it went back to the next slide view.
Oh, I'm so sorry about this. We actually practiced this. Apologies. So do I want to duplicate slideshow? How's that?
Oh, it's the swap. So it looks like we're back to you again.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. I'm glad you fed your kitty though.
Let's see. Well, what we had, even with the next slide, I think it's usable, is it not?
Can I just go here? Yeah.
See, that Let's looks see. Good.
Now
You got it.
Yeah, it looks good on this side.
I know, but I'm not seeing the screen here. Hang on a second, sorry. Oh dear. Problem is I'm not seeing my slides, so it's making it challenging.
Do you want me to see if I can share my screen?
Hang on a second. Are you guys seeing it now?
Yeah,
are you guys seeing the slide now?
Yeah, we're seeing both slides. Yeah.
Let's just roll.
Well, if that's okay, let's just keep going. I apologize for that. So today, a couple things Jeff already said. We want to talk with you a little bit about how we can respond to the governor's request. And in the context of doing that, we want to share a little bit about what we've done to date and kind of what new activities we're considering at the moment. First, a special announcement. I just wanted to spend a moment here because it's so timely. The Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife has a climate adapted culverts project team that just yesterday, the day before, was honored at OFWA's annual meeting. They received this national award for climate adaptation leadership, which is awesome. The team has done really amazing work in helping to bring the climate science down to the ground. They worked with climate science and engineers to understand how we can build in future projections into the way we design culverts so that they can be resilient to changes in future peak flows. They did amazing work, and we're very honored to receive this award. There was a number of categories, and our team won for state and local government. So congratulations to the team. Way to go. Awesome work. Okay, just a couple of slides here on kind of what we've done so we can better understand the context for how we're approaching this new request from the governor. I've been at this for about 10 years. I was hired 10 years ago as a climate change coordinator, and I've been very honored to have that position here at the agency. I like to think of our work in different kind of streams of work. So one big stream of work, particularly early on, has been building the capacity of staff and ourselves as an agency to understand climate change, understand our opportunities to respond. So we not only bring the science into the agency, but help staff understand how you deal with the uncertainty that's inherent in climate change science and how you help bring that to management decisions. We've also, there's a lot of science, tremendous amount of science that's being developed and synthesized across our region from a number of different organizations. We work very closely with the Climate Impacts Group at the University of Washington, Northwest Climate Science Center, many other partners across the state, some of our federal land management agencies. We've done some science internally here. The Climate Adapted Culverts Project is a great example of that. We've also, I'm very proud of a vulnerability assessment we did for 268 species of conservation need, where we looked at exactly how they are vulnerable to climate change and how we might start to use that information in management decisions. One project that's really exciting right now, we're working with the University of Washington as a partner in better understanding this concept of climate refugia. How do we identify how rain shifts might change? We're looking at sage grouse right now in the future, so that as we try and figure out what areas might be the top priority for protection, we can understand which of those overlay with how the future habitat might change. Really great work. We can't do this work alone, of course, especially in climate change. It's such a huge issue. Partnership is key and becoming, I think, increasingly important as the scale of efforts to respond to climate change increase. There are more and more opportunities for us to work to leverage what we want to see happen. What are our priorities around climate resilience? And all of these partnerships represent opportunities to advance those. We were a founding member of the Interagency Climate Adaptation Network. We work closely in the Climate Change Committee with AFWA. They're doing, they meet regularly. There's a great core of very committed practitioners around the country. Finally, policy. I know you all are aware that in 3 years ago, our agency adopted our climate policy, and I've been very proud to help to implement that. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second, but I also thought it's timely to note that in 2020, the legislature passed a climate resiliency proviso, and they allocated $50 million for OFM to distribute to state agencies on climate resiliency projects. The governor vetoed the $50 million, but the climate resiliency proviso stays. And so OFM is now having to deliver a report in November that prioritize climate resilient investments across the state. And so we are working closely with them to help in developing criteria for how to prioritize those projects. Even though there's no money this year, I think this is really important work, and it's, I guess it's helping to demonstrate that the need for us to sharpen our priorities around climate resilience, because we're gonna be asked, and there may be some opportunities to fund those. Very briefly around this policy, 3 years ago, the purpose is to provide guidance for managing risks to the agency. There are several parts to the policy, but basically the bottom line is that we are to manage our operations and assets so as to better understand, mitigate, and adapt to climate change. And we list a range of activities for which we're to do this. As I said, I've been very, very happy to have this policy, and I have felt very proud to work for an agency that that is willing to take a stand here. But we've definitely realized some challenges in how to implement it. The challenges is that we didn't really establish ownership. As you can see from the list of activities on the screen, no one program owns that. And so the accountability piece has been a little bit challenging. We also didn't really prioritize. So as you can see from those activities, if we don't include climate and technical assistance, has maybe a different impact if we don't include climate in how we acquire new lands. So another part of the policy was that we would establish an internal team to help guide implementation of this policy. And partially to address these challenges, our team is now doing a risk assessment for looking across the agency program by program and really systematically challenging the programs to identify how will climate change, what is it we want to do, and how will climate change affect our ability to achieve the desired outcomes, meet obligations, deliver services. And we're trying to assess for each of those the likelihood that that change might happen and then the consequences if it does. And our aim is to submit a report back to our executive management team that highlights those activities most at risk, highest likelihood and highest consequence of climate change affecting what we do. And I will say we're sort of midway through this work. It's all encompassing, but there've been some really great conversations. We're meeting division by division and habitat wildlife program. Fish program is doing things a little bit differently. We're about to set off on 6 different climate conversations around the state. And I'm really excited to hope that this product, when we compile it, will really help us better understand clearly where the biggest needs are. That's kind of where we've been, what we're engaged in now, kind of what's on our plate for the future. Jeff mentioned the draft strategic plan, which I know you'll all be discussing in a little bit here. One of the near-term actions is to develop and implement a climate resilience plan. And there's 4 things under that. The first 2, I think we're well along the way to accomplishing identifying species and habitats at risk. So that's our vulnerability assessment will really help us there and address actions for the agency to make its work more resilient to climate change. So that's this risk assessment that we're conducting now, I think is gonna really help us kind of key into that quickly. The next 2 items I think are not things we've spent quite as much time on, so that may be some new work here, identifying nature-based resilient solutions that can be used statewide, things like the floodplains by design program, how can we use natural restoration projects to help mitigate the effects of floods, and then aligning state decarbonization advances with efforts to protect biodiversity. So this is where, as the state begins to invest heavily in solar, in often shrub step habitat, how do we maximize our ability to do that in ways that don't impact habitat? And so it's not that we haven't been doing these 2 pieces of work, but I think this calls them out clearly under the climate resilience banner and will help us sort of organize our work here. So I kind of see those as areas that we will probably want to put more energy into. Also from our plan, Jeff also mentioned that there's a sustainability plan. And in that, we say we want to include actions to minimize our carbon footprint and maximize carbon sequestration. And these are 2 areas where we have not put a lot of energy into it, even though our policy does say that we should become leaders in this area. So I see these as really ripe, potent areas where I think there's a lot for us to accomplish here. DNR has been investing in understanding how to maximize carbon sequestration. I think there's a lot of opportunity for us to sort of come up to the plate here. So that's sort of where we've been, what we're doing now, what's on our plate. And now I want to spend just a moment here responding to the governor's ask. So as I understand it, he had a conversation with you around how our agency can do more to get hunters and anglers more engaged on understanding and combating climate change. So really interested in your thoughts on this. We came up with a couple of options. One, just more to sort of clarify the directive back to us. We could add a bullet to that strategic plan action I showed you that sort of would identify or put a point on that this is an expectation or a directive back to us as an agency. So we already talked about these 4 things that are under this climate resilience plan. Potentially, we could add a 5th that says that we will develop and implement strategies for communicating to our customers about the risk of climate change. Perhaps it could be some different words there, but the idea being that we name this, we say this is something that we want to deliver on, and putting it in the strategic plan, I think sets up that opportunity. Secondly, I think that we could in terms of the content, what is it we could actually do? There are a number of organizations that have been working in the space, quite a lot, some of them in the past 10 years. There, I think we could partner with some of these and work with them to sort of bring what they do back into the state. I don't know how familiar y'all are with these, but I'm just going to profile really quickly three of them. The National Wildlife Federation has done quite a bit of work around really targeting messages to hunters and anglers about climate changers, about how climate was going to affect the resources that hunters and anglers care about. You can see on the slide here the content table of contents for that, and talks about why hunters and anglers should care. And then you'll notice towards the bottom there, taking action, what they can do. And a number of these reports are including that sort of piece around what is it you can do about it. The Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership also has a longstanding program to target these climate messages to hunters and anglers. You see here from the blog, there's a message around the hunting community. And then on the right side, there was a video, Sportsmen and Climate Change. And they actually had a program that they were doing a number of presentations in all of the Western states. This is a number of years ago, I think like 2013. And they did include Washington in that. So there was a fellow who recorded a video around sportsmen climate change, and they made appointments with different fly fishing groups in Washington and actually shared that video. So they had to have some experience here in Washington. And then lastly, this is an organization that's new to me. I just came across it in sort of researching for this presentation, Conservation Hawks. Here's from their web page. They are hunters and anglers defending their future. And here I'm just sort of highlighting that in looking at the issues that could impact their sporting heritage, they see climate change as the largest threat, and they're dedicating their efforts towards addressing it while they can still make a difference. So they've done some, it was really fun looking at their website, a number of different videos and educational programs aimed at hunters and anglers. This one is called Cold Water, it's 10 minutes. I included a link at the end of the slideshow, which we all have, so at your leisure, you might consider watching it. I thought it was awesome. I thought it was really very well done. It's only 10 minutes. The first part really clearly communicates the passion people have for this. This one is particularly more oriented towards the Rockies, but the passion that people have for this sport, and then how they're seeing things change, and not that because they're reading the newspapers or looking at a science report, how they're seeing it change, you know, like in their own experience, seeing the increase in fires, seeing the limits on opportunity, seeing streams off limits because of warm temperatures. Really good work. So, you know, that's a potential area for us to invest in further. We could, I have A through D here, a couple of different ways to think about, like, how could we work with this work that's good work that's already underway? We could fund these organizations to do some outreach specific to Washington. They've obviously developed some strong work around messaging. We could partner with them and then use our own staff and public affairs office to sort of deliver that in the way that makes sense to us. Number C is pretty interesting, would take a lot of effort, but form a coalition in Washington with sportsmen's groups. Have the sportsmen's group lead this effort. And you know, DFW being a strong partner in that to help deliver these messages. And finally, just none of these are mutually exclusive, obviously, just different ways to think about it. We could task our public affairs office with integrating climate change into our communications wherever it makes sense, wherever it's part of an important message. So that's really all I had for you today. Jeff, I don't know if there's anything you want to add here.
No, other than if there's any discussion, I think the key, Mr. Chair, for any sort of direction that the commission wants to give Lynn and I to either, you know, add it into the strategic plan and continue to pursue it, or you know, any direction you have for us to help you kind of deliver on your conversation with the governor.
No, thank you, Jeff. I have a comment, and then I hope some of the other commissioners will have some thoughts as well, because I do feel that this is critically important, and the governor's request of us was very meaningful, and I think it's something we really need to dig into. A very simple question. I'm sure you folks have talked about it internally umpteen times. I'm just trying to absorb what Lynn was sharing with us, and how do you see you building a coalition of the right people to get involved in, for example, a steering committee or something like that? I observed a fair amount of the ORCA workshop, what went on. Brad Smith was on that with others. Something that's really functional. Jeff, Lynn, if you have any comments on how to do that, because so many of these initiatives get started and then they get weighted down with chit-chat, mm-hmm. and they're not making the kind of progress that you all want and we need. So I'll leave it at that for the moment.
Yeah, Larry?
Yeah, Brad. And Lynn, can you take down the screen now so I can see the rest of the commissioners if they have their hands up? Thank you so much.
No, apologies.
Commissioner Smith.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, thanks. Since after the governor's meeting, then Lynn and Jeff and I chatted about this, but thanks for all the good work you've done in putting this together. On the options, Lynn, the four options, and I won't ask to put them back up, but I would like to see us be bold. And I know staff time is critical now. We have a lot of things in the hopper, but I would like to see us start to whittle away at all four options. You know, some are easier to do than others, just like having the public affairs folks incorporate the message as it goes out. But maybe a steering committee with the caveats that Larry mentioned, which I totally agree with, maybe we should start to investigate that, at least to start to discuss who would be some of the appropriate people. Because I think if we take a proactive stance on this right now and convey that message across the street from, you know, to the governor's office, I think there would be good dividends in all of this. And it's also the right thing to do. So I'm encouraging us to be bold in this with the realization that resources are tight and there's a lot of demands and furloughs and everything like that.
I would just say, just to put a point on that, just in my own understanding of, you know, climate change can be a very politically charged issue, y'all know that, that there's a real power in having the message come from your own community.
Yeah.
And that's the power of having this coalition. And it would take some concerted effort, but each of those examples I showed you were led by people from the hunting and fishing community. And I think if the purpose were very clear and the timeline of the effort were very clear, it's easier to gather people together. If DFW is providing the convening, kind of the space and the organizing, I think that helps to have sort of an organizer that houses the process. I think it could be important for us not to lead here if we had a choice. You know, we're a partner in having the message be carried by people trusted from the community.
Yeah, I agree.
If I could add one thing before I go to Commissioner Anderson and then Commissioner Thorburn, whose hand just went up. Just brainstorming. I can think of certainly a segment of people from academia, but I also can think of some really very significant and very powerful business people in this state that have huge connections, many of which are, you know, in different places. You all know some, but in Bellevue, I mean, I know some of Bill Gates' staff on the philanthropic side, and they potentially could be movers and shakers in this arena. And so I just want to throw that out. I'll go to Commissioner Anderson, Commissioner Thorburn, Commissioner Linville, and then Jeff, if you have your hand up. Good.
Yes. I was reflecting on the coalition with sportsmen's groups, and I, Larry, I think you're suggesting, you know, there's definitely a broader constituency out there, and broader group, but with regard to sportsmen's groups, the model that the department has had with the budget and policy advisory group, I think, is probably as good of an example of networking out with people of a like interest from broad wildlife interest to fishing interest to hunting interests and the like. So that might be the place to start. There are probably people within each of those organizations or associations that that would be on point with this, and that might be an organizational approach.
Yeah, good comment, Jim Anderson. Commissioner Thorburn and Commissioner Linville.
Thank you a lot for the presentation, Lynn. The department has been doing great work, and I'm glad to see the recognition by AFWA. Another thought on a model, because of the resource questions at this time, I know when we did our 2015 swap update, that climate change was very much a part of the considerations, the public process. We accessed the UW group to build climate change concerns into the species and habitats that were identified in the swap. So that's one area of public process where we have engaged on climate change. Another thought would be using some of our existing groups. GMAC probably hasn't considered a lot around climate change on those issues. They're usually thinking about seasons and bag limits and that sort of thing. But maybe intercalating climate change into some of our strong existing advisory groups would be another approach that would accomplish what Brad is suggesting.
Commissioner Linville, please.
Yeah, thank you, Lynn. I really appreciated your comment on it maybe not coming from the department. I just really want to strongly emphasize that a couple of things, actually. From rural Eastern and Central Washington, if this gets crammed down anybody's throat, that's when you get the cutting off your nose to spite your face responses to climate change. And having a collaborative effort where the solution comes from within and works outwards, I mean, that is the only, in my mind, that is the only durable piece you're going to find around this topic. I just want to strongly emphasize that, and it can happen, because what happens is folks who don't understand the rural agricultural type lifestyle want to impose changes that sometimes we can't even implement because it's not possible to produce food and be under those regulations, right? And so that's why the change has to happen from within. The warning is, and I've learned this from the whole wolf topic actually, is that durable change takes forever, right? Like, you have to put your patient pants on in a major, major way. And you have to also look at it from the 10,000 foot elevation so that you can see those small changes that are indeed happening, but just aren't really evident. We often out here in rural America get like, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, but we don't change fast, right? And so those are just kind of my thoughts around this. And I just love and really encourage that the solution comes from, you know, bottom and then works its way up. I think that's the way to go for sure.
Jeff, and then looks like Commissioner Baker wants to wrap it up.
Sounds good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be super quick. I think I'm adding to what Commissioner Anderson said. You know, the steps that I think about are reaching out to those three, at least those three organizations that Lynn has done research around, and asking them how they've been successful in the areas that they've focused their time and energy, and maybe creating a strategy or a pathway forward or a process from there. But leading, you know, having them help us not have to recreate the wheel or go through the conflicts or ditches that they had to go through to get to where they are. So that I just, again, thinking that was adding to what I heard or I interpreted Commissioner Anderson saying, and that's how I'm thinking about it.
Jeff, before I go to Commissioner Baker, I just want to close my thoughts. I hear the commission supporting this directive very aggressively. And so feedback from you, suggestions, criticism, ideas, please be forthright with bringing those forward, and we can open more doors as needed. Okay. Commissioner Baker.
Thank you, Chair Carpenter. I also agree with everything that I've heard today. I want to note a couple of things. First off, Lynn and Jeff, the best thing I think about your presentation today is the evidence that you all have been thinking about this for a while, and the fact that we have an agency policy on climate change. I'm still trying to figure, I believe we need a commission policy on climate change, and heard loud and clear Jeff's thought yesterday that perhaps we should combine that with a commission policy on conservation. So I'll be giving that more thought, and I'd like to talk to the Big Tent Committee more about that. I'll also note that the Oregon Commission has very recently adopted a climate change policy, and I think we should probably see and consider that. Most of us are of an age where we grew up, when we were young, we weren't thinking much about this, and then there came a phase of our lives where we were hearing about what was then called global warming. Apparently that phrase wasn't very popular, so it sort of got morphed into climate change. But it was always something that was going to happen in the future. And listening to Molly's comments about how long these things talk and how none of us can really come up with more specifics than climate change, it's because it is such a complex issue that it's very difficult to get our heads around. But the fact is that climate change isn't something that's going to happen in the future anymore, at least in my opinion. And the next thing is, all I bet you any one of us has to do right now is look outside, and we see the very real effects of climate change. So my point is that I totally get the idea that and think it's great that we have sportsmen thinking about this. We had a discussion earlier about whether the fires necessitate us thinking about altering hunting seasons. It's happening now. And so, of course, I support somehow mobilizing or supporting sportsmen in addressing these challenges specifically. But I also heard Chair Carpenter talk about business and possibly philanthropists. I think it would be a mistake to cut out the rest of the state that aren't sportsmen if we are going to begin to try to put together real responses to this. But that is not to say that I don't support having as part of this, what Big Tent that has to respond to this, being a major sportsman faction. I don't think though that our response to it is limited to sportsmen. I think it's also people who like to watch birds and all the other stuff that you guys have heard about. So I just want to make it clear that I am all for the approaches that we're talking about, but I think it would be a mistake to limit it.
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead, Jeff, please.
Thank you. I couldn't agree more, Commissioner Baker. In my experience, the types of organizations I think you're thinking of are also leaders in climate resiliency and climate change, and we've been partnered with, and so we'll continue to do that. And Mr. Chair, super quick, I think in your conversation with the governor, the commission was going to send back some sort of report on what we intend to do to follow up. And so Lynn and I can work together to kind of summarize today's presentation and maybe write that up for your all consideration to advance to the governor.
Jeff, that would be great. Also, I had asked at the time for Commissioner Smith and Commissioner Baker to kind of take the lead. Brad's career in academia, I think, brings a lot to the table. So, yes, we do want to respond to what the governor said and get something drafted. So that would be very, very helpful.
Yeah, and I'm happy to continue working with it. Yeah.
Well, now that you're back from vacation, we'll look forward to that. Okay, Jeff, Lynn, does that wrap up this item for the day? Okay, don't move, Jeff, and we'll get Rob on here. And folks, we're now moving to agenda item 6, strategic plan.